Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. Coming up on the program, all eyes on Omicron. The next wave or false alarm?
We are investigating other cases, so I would not be surprised if we find more in Ontario because we've got a very robust surveillance system.
The first cases of the potentially dangerous new variant land in Canada nearly 2 years into this pandemic. Is this the start of a dangerous fifth wave? Or can it be stopped? Will the vaccines hold up? Are more lockdowns coming if things get worse? The World Health Organization is calling Omicron high risk. We have Dr. Peter Singer, the special advisor to the head of the WHO, standing by to give us the latest. Then MPs will stand by. Is shutting the borders to some countries enough? Then, Omicron anger. Why is South Africa so furious about the travel bans?
There is no scientific justification whatsoever for keeping these restrictions in place.
Is it unfair to shut off travel from southern African countries with the new variant? What does it say about vaccine equity around the world? South Africa's High Commissioner to Canada is here to respond and elaborate. And conversion therapy crackdown, can it finally be passed?
These dangerous practices simply must end.
Will the government pass this bill before the holidays after failing to do so in the last parliament? And there's another Liberal promise to the LGBTQ plus community still in limbo, the lifting of the ban on gay men donating blood. Are these votes deepening fault lines in the main parties? The press gallery will weigh in on all that. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Here we go again. Well, maybe. And we hope not. But after the World Health Organization declared Omicron the new COVID variant of concern, countries around the world, including Canada, quickly imposed travel restrictions on seven southern African countries. But travel restrictions were not enough to contain the new variant. 2 days after the federal restrictions came into effect, Canada saw its first cases of the new variant get confirmed. As of right now, there are three cases, two in Ontario, one in Quebec, and two presumptive cases. Today, Canada's Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos attended an emergency G7 meeting over Omicron. Minister Duclos tweeted that Canada is committed to working with the World Health Organization and international partners to share information and monitor the new variant. But as the world tries to get a handle on this, what do we know about it? Will the vaccines remain effective? Will travel bans do anything? Let's find out. Joining me now is Dr. Peter Singer, a Canadian physician who is the special advisor to the Director General of the WHO. And he joins us now. Dr. Singer, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Hope you and your family are well. There's lots of questions about the new variant, the Omicron. What do we know about it and what should we know about it?
Thank you for having me, Evan. What we know is that it has a lot of mutations, and that it can change the epidemiology in terms of, the percentage of a particular type of variant. What we don't know is whether it's more transmissible, whether it changes the clinical severity of the disease, or whether it has an effect on the effectiveness of vaccination. But we're working very hard with researchers around the world to figure out those questions, which are obviously the key questions, Evan.
Okay, how transmissible? Not sure yet, but it seems more transmissible if some of these countries are any indication. Do the vaccines work? What is the fatality rate? We don't know all of this issue. When will we get solid answers on do vaccines work? Is this more deadly?
This will take weeks to sort out, days to weeks. But in the meantime, Evan, there are things that individual Canadians can do. This is a time to follow the advice of public health authorities. We have excellent public health leaders in Canada. And also to raise your guard. You know, if you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated, because that works against a wide range of this virus. And use the public health measures. You know, outside is safer than inside. Be in a well-ventilated space. Wear a mask and use physical distancing. It's time for people to raise their guard, and that's what we can do while these answers are being sorted, Evan.
But you know our guards are being dropped. It's the holiday season. People are traveling. People have said, well, we're through this. The COVID rates are low. The vaccination rates are high, especially in Canada. Yet we've got them here. So, like, are we going backwards with this new variant? Just give me a sense of how are we, is this the beginning of a fifth wave that we've just got to, however reluctantly, wake up to?
Too early to tell, too early to know. You're right. It's been a very strong vaccine rollout in Canada. But now's not the time to let down our guard. You know, we may be done with COVID, but COVID ain't done with us, and it definitely ain't over. And, you know, speaking of vaccination, one of the main ways to keep Canadians safe, Evan, is to vaccinate the world. We've got 70, 80% vaccination rates in Canada. That level of fully vaccinated is 7% across the African continent. Only one in four health workers across the African continent is vaccinated. And what that means is that the virus has free rein in unvaccinated populations. Viruses love to mutate. And the more it rages, the more it mutates and the greater the risk of variants. So if we want to avoid the next variant, then we have to vaccinate the world. That's the best way, or one of the best ways, to keep Canadians safe. We want to slam the barn door shut before the horse bolts.
Well, in other words, this may not be the last variant. We don't even know what this is. Just really quick, what's the WHO's position on travel bans? Canada has banned travel from about seven Southern African countries. Other countries have done the same. Are these effective at this point?
So the rules of the road on travel restrictions have been set by countries themselves. And so it's the call of governments. But what WHO says and what those rules say is that the restrictions should be risk-based and time-limited. And we also need to keep in mind two really important things. Firstly, they're definitely not a silver bullet. You know, they have real limits on their effectiveness and have to be part of a comprehensive package of measures. And secondly, they sometimes create perverse incentives. So here, you know, a huge shout out to the governments of South Africa and Botswana and to the incredible scientists in South Africa who used cutting edge science to find this variant. We want to incentivize that kind of transparency, and travel bans may do the opposite. You know, that scientist
like
who
disincentivize a country from admitting they've got a new variant.
Yeah. I mean, for example, to be very concrete, the brilliant scientist in South Africa, who was the person who ran the lab that found this variant, was tweeting today that as a result of the travel bans, he can't get the reagents he needs to keep being essentially the eyes and ears of the world. Whether that's in South Africa, whether that's in any country in the world, we want to incentivize transparency. And that's a negative effect of travel bans as well. And again, you know, big shout out to the government of South Africa and to the cutting edge scientists, and also the government of Botswana that reported this, because these are our eyes and ears. That's the way to keep the world safe. And we definitely want to reward that kind of behavior, not punish it.
Okay, well, we will speak to the High Commissioner from South Africa about this very issue coming up later in the program. But Dr. Peter Singer, Special Advisor to the WHO's Director General, great to have you here and your critical view on this issue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Okay, so that's Dr. Singer from the World Health Organization. What about the politics of the pandemic response? Are travel bans useful? Are they political, or are they just... you know, are they scientific? MPs are here to debate that. Arif Virani is a Liberal MP for Parkdale High Park, Tim Apple, Conservative MP for Edmonton Millwoods, and Don Davies, NDP MP for Vancouver Kingsway. Gents, good to have all of you. Mr. Virani, the travel ban on South Africa and the other countries did not stop Omicron from getting in, this variant. Is your government looking to ban more countries? Are these bans scientific-based, or are they political?
I think very much so the bans are scientifically based, Evan. What we're doing is responding to the WHO and the international community and the scientific advice we've been receiving all the way back to March of 2020 in terms of how we respond to this pandemic. Omicron is concerning. It's concerning for me. It's concerning for all of our viewers. It's concerning for our government. the message I want to impart on Canadians who are watching is that we are taking the measures that are necessary to keep them safe, including the border measures. And what we've done is implemented a travel ban for foreign nationals coming through any of seven countries, including South Africa, from arriving in Canada. For Canadians who are always entitled to return home, there are rigid requirements that are in place, including testing, which is even retroactive. So it includes those who have arrived already in Canada from one of these seven countries in the last 14 days. They would be subjected to rigid testing and quarantine rules and isolation where required. And that's what's important. But it's also important what your previous guest was talking about, that other science-based methods are also critical to keep in mind, such as getting vaccinated, keeping a distance, wearing a mask, and as we all work to combat this together.
Just real quick before I get to the opposition, here's the problem. Nigeria wasn't under the ban, and the virus came in from Nigeria. Two cases originated there. And then you got Dr. Theresa Tam saying these travel bans are performative, not scientific. What's the government's response to that?
Well, I think our response is that this is a very dynamic virus. I mean, that's got to be clear to everyone over these last 20-odd months. And we are responding in a dynamic manner. And if we need to add countries to that list, we will add countries. But we are also putting in place the rigid testing. I think Minister Carolyn Bennett put it well, saying that the PCR tests that are already in place for any trip of longer than 72 hours is already there to detect any type of COVID virus, including this COVID virus. So it's very important we've kept those in place, including against some of the calls from the official opposition. As early as November 12th, people were putting into question, including the leader of the opposition, about the validity of PCR tests going forward for vaccinated travelers. Clearly, it was prudent to maintain those tests in place, and that's what we will do going forward. And they're helping us right now with this fight against Omicron and whatever other variant emerges.
Mr. Apple, can you respond to that? Two, what else do you think the government should do on the first part? And on the second part, was it too early to call for getting rid of things like PCR tests given the new variant of concern?
Thank you, Evan. I mean, as you know, that right when we heard about this new variant, conservatives called on this government to enact travel bans to ensure that we secure our borders, to protect Canadians, and also protect our economy. And I'm pleased to hear that the Liberals have now, you know, changed their tune on that, because in the past they have been too slow. And so we need to learn from the mistakes that the Liberals have made, that we need to act quickly. And so some of those measures have been put in place now, other measures as well that we have called for. So that's good to see. As for the PCR test, I think, it has to be a balanced approach. I think it's important that people that are coming from affected areas where it's well known and documented that we, you know, make sure that they are tested, that they are in quarantine. But that does not have to extend to everybody every time we hear that there may be a variant.
Okay, so Mr. Davies, what else can the government do? They've got the travel ban. There's a real genuine scientific debate if those work or not. I think Canadians wanted to see something done and governments around the world. I don't know whether they're effective or not. What's your take?
Well, you know, there's a couple things that have been, I think, stated repeatedly for well over a year now, Evan. One of them is that no one is protected until everyone is protected. And the other thing that's clear to everyone is that this virus knows no borders. So what's the takeaway? We all have an interest in making sure that everybody is vaccinated as soon as possible. The only problem is that governments like the Canadian one, like the Trudeau government, have not acted in accordance with that. Just take two examples. At the WTO, South Africa, which ironically is in the region where the Omicron variant just came from, South Africa and India, months and months ago, asked the WTO to relax rules, the TRIPS rules, that would allow countries to be able to produce vaccines on a temporary basis. Trudeau government refuses that. Second of all, in terms of COVAX, which is supposed to be the major way that we're going to get doses to the developing world in this country, they're about a half billion doses short right now. Canada's contribution, I heard in question period today, Minister Sajjan said that they pledged 200 million doses by the end of 2022. That's more than a year from now. And to date, how many have they donated? 8.3 million. So about 4% of the doses, and a lot of that donation, Evan, is in cash terms. So what Canada is doing is pledging money to countries to buy vaccine doses that they can't produce or get. So, You know, talk is cheap, but this government has done a terrible job in acting as a G7 country, as a developed country, in helping to make sure that the rest of the world gets access as quickly as possible to vaccine doses. Right. And when you see Omicron develop, that was a predictable result of that kind of policy approach.
Well, let me go back to you, Ara Farani. I had Stephen Lewis on this program more than a year ago. He was talking about the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, which is the TRIPS that Mr. Davies refers to. That is part of the WTO. That is a measure that supposedly protects property rights. He said we should learn from the pandemic of AIDS. We should make sure join India and South Africa and over 120 other countries and drop our opposition or at least support the fact that they should drop the patents and let these countries produce vaccines before there's a mutation. Canada has never voted to support dropping that. And now the question is, why not? And should Canada have done that?
So, Evan, a couple of things in terms of response. And first of all, to Mr. Uppel, there's an issue about acting quickly. You've been acting quickly throughout the pandemic, but there is some issue that I would take with learning from one's mistakes. The mistake would have been to remove the PCR testing requirement as Aaron O'Toole called for on November 12th. So that's the first response. With respect to the points that Don Davies is raising, those are some very valid points. Clearly, this is a global issue. There are global variants, and we need to protect everyone on the planet. That is agreed. What we are doing is doing exactly that via a very sizable international aid and development package of $2.5 billion and a $200 million vaccine commitment. He highlighted the fact that TRIPS, and you've just highlighted it as well, is about reducing the inability of some nations to manufacture these vaccines themselves based on generics at a much lower cost rate. That is something that we believe in as a philosophical objective. We apply that to our own approach to pharmacare in this country in terms of trying to bring down the cost of medication. And that is something that is definitely worth exploring. But it is not correct to state that we're not doing our share in terms of protecting
people globally. If that's the case, I just to be, you know, there was the vote on this was put from last year, and then it was pushed and pushed and pushed. And Canada has said, we're exploring it. We're 21 months into this. There's a potential fifth wave. Why has Canada not supported South Africa and India on that very issue? If it's philosophically important, we're way past philosophy and we're into pandemics now, why not support it?
Well, I reject the underlying assumption that we're not supporting India and South Africa. We are working very closely with India on a number of fronts and with South Africa. We applaud, as your previous guest did, South Africa's transparency in terms of discovering and revealing this to the world, this new Omicron variant. And what we're trying to do is work with them to give them access, give them the ability to purchase vaccines, but also the ability to develop them.
Mr. Apple, and then Mr. Davies, real quick, Mr. Apple.
No, I mean, I think we're back to, again, what we have with the problem with the Liberals is that there's a lot of talk on a lot of these issues. They talk about putting money towards something, but what we really need is action, especially when we're talking about what's happening here in Canada. Well, how do we protect Canadians the best? How do we protect our economy? We must learn from the Liberals' mistakes in the past of how slow they've been to act quickly. And this is important. We need to ensure that we get this under control. Protecting our border now will give us some time to sort this out, find out how much of a concern this is, how effective are the vaccines on this, and how best to protect Canadians moving forward. Right. So I think it was important that we moved ahead to protect our borders.
Okay, so you support what the Liberals did there. Last word to you, Mr. Davies.
Well, quickly, scientists have been telling us for months and months that we simply have to make sure that the world is vaccinated as soon as possible. You look at Africa, less than 10% of the continent is vaccinated. There's 54 countries there. I think the whole Omicron variant, it just underscores the need to prioritize vaccine based on need, Evan. It's ultimately self-defeating for us to get a 75-80% vaccination rate in Canada and then allow the rest of the world to be unvaccinated when we know that leaving the world unvaccinated increases the probability of developing variants of concern, which may end up proving to be immune to the vaccinations that we're doing. So it's in everybody's interest. It's not just an ethics issue. It's a matter of strong, smart public health. And I'm calling on the Trudeau government to start acting in accordance with their rhetoric.
All right, I got to leave it there. Listen, let's hope the vaccines hold and we're not in this dire situation, but we got to prepare practically. Mr. Varani, Mr. Uppel, Mr. Davies, always a pleasure. Thank you, gents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Still to come, why is South Africa so furious about these travel bans over Omicron? Is the country being used as a scapegoat after discovering the new variant? South Africa's High Commissioner to Canada joins us next. Stay with us. After South Africa announced the discovery of the Omicron variant, Canada and other countries were very quick to bring in travel restrictions. But was South Africa unfairly targeted in all of this? The South African president says yes, that the bans are wrong, unfair, and punitive. And today he said he wants to see those bans lifted before it leads to massive damage to their economy. Check this out.
There is no scientific justification whatsoever for keeping these restrictions in place. The rich countries of the world need to support the efforts of developing countries, economies that is, to access and to manufacture enough vaccine doses for their people without delay.
Even Dr. Theresa Tam, Canada's Chief Medical Officer of Health, regards the travel bans as, quote, performative. For example, the two cases reported in Ottawa traveled from Nigeria through Montreal's Pierre Elliott Trudeau International Airport. Nigeria not on the list of countries Canada imposed travel restrictions on. So with Omicron already in Canada, is the travel ban on South Africa and other countries effective? And could the globe's reaction to South Africa lead to a chilling effect on future reporting on new variants of concern? Joining us now is South Africa's High Commissioner to Canada, Sibongi Seni Lamini Matumbo. High Commissioner, good to have you on the program. What is the reaction of your country to Canada's travel ban? Is that fair?
Good evening. Our feeling right now is that any sane person is questioning the irrational and illogical harsh move that has been taken not only by Canada to ban South Africa and its including its neighboring countries in the Southern African region. South Africa should actually be applauded for its sophisticated medical research capabilities. These superior research capabilities by the scientists in South Africa were refined actually during the unfortunate HIV/AIDS era and are today proving to be very useful during the COVID-19 era. Look, as a nation, South Africa is committed to multilateralism and in the spirit of Ubuntu, the spirit of working together and finding solutions to combat the pandemic. South Africa immediately reported to the World Health Organization and we shared the detection of the latest variant with its numerous mutations to the spike protein. Now, the variant which is now referred to as Omicron. That country that shared openly with the global community after going a step further in practicing genomic surveillance. Unfortunately, a country which has displayed the highest levels of transparency and integrity is now being demonized for doing the right thing. We now know that.
High Commissioner, let me just ask you, High Commissioner, I totally appreciate what you're saying. South Africa was transparent. We just talked to the WHO about this. By the same token, is it prudent for countries to say, I'm glad you're transparent, but there's no corollary between protecting our citizens if they believe a travel ban is effective and transparency? Do you blame other countries for a travel ban?
This is happening is really a knee-jerk reaction. The entire world needs to understand that this is a crisis. We need to share information. And for South Africa to be sharing this information, it's hoping that the information will be used to find solutions. But instead, the borders are being closed. It's really a knee-jerk reaction. It has no scientific basis. So we just don't understand what is happening.
What is your message right now to Mr. Trudeau and the Canadian government on this issue? As they're grappling with the arrival of Omicron, there's fears about it. I understand there's also a vaccine equity issue, and we've just spoken with MPs about the South African call to drop the patents on and to let countries like South Africa produce generic vaccines, as you referenced with the HIV issue. But what is your message about the travel bans to the Canadian government?
Look, I think, like I said before, we heard from Dr. Mike Ryan, very recently the executive director of the World Health Organization, who deals with emergency programs, who said countries have to stop taking knee-jerk reactions. Here, I'm not going to talk about a particular country, but I'm talking to countries that have banned South African people traveling from South Africa to really look into the matter. What is even more disturbing is that we all know today that this variant has been picked up in quite a number of other countries. Countries like Hong Kong, the UK, Belgium, Israel. But these countries have not been banned. It's only South Africa and the neighboring countries. And if you think about it, Swaziland, for instance, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, some of the countries which have been banned, they have not reported any of this Omicron, but they have banned. So this is very disturbing.
I have about 10 seconds, High Commissioner. What does that tell you? Just do you have any opinion as to why it's the Southern African countries and not other countries that have already had confirmed cases of Omicron? They have not had a travel ban. To what do you attribute that?
To be honest with you, we are still puzzled. My minister will soon be talking to Minister Jolly. She has requested a meeting to talk, because you are trying to understand why Southern Africa, why a country, for instance, South Africa, that is contributing so much towards this pandemic in terms of research. Why are we being punished? That we are trying to, we just don't understand what is happening. And it's even more unfair, like I said, the countries which also have reported this variant, they have not been banned. I don't know what we can contribute this to, but we hope very soon we will know.
High Commissioner from South Africa to Canada, Sibongi Seni Lamini Matumbo, thank you very much, High Commissioner, for joining us. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Do take care. Turning now to British Columbia, more rain is the last thing the flood-ravaged province wants to see. That is the situation. Residents still trying to pick up the pieces. They're watching and waiting as water threatens properties again. In Abbotsford, BC, which has been walloped, they've been watching the overflowing Nooksack River in neighboring Washington State as the water heads north again across the border. Let's get the latest from Abbotsford. First, listen to this. This is Abbotsford Mayor Henry Braun.
In Huntington Village, water has recently come up, and there is approximately 2 feet at Boundary and 2nd Avenue. At 4 o'clock in the morning, it was dry. I was out there myself. This is the water that we remain, that we were expecting from the Nooksack River overflow yesterday, and the evacuation order for Huntington remains in place. In conversations with Whatcom County officials earlier, we understand that flooding is still active across the border, and that we will continue to experience flooding over the next few days from water stored in fields upstream of the road crossings at the border.
So that's the mayor of Abbotsford. Let's bring in CTV's Heather Wright. She's in Abbotsford right now. Heather, so we heard from the mayor. What are you expecting there? What's the latest?
Well, we are right where the mayor was talking about. We are basically, feet meters from the U.S. border. And we were here when that floodwater started coming over earlier this morning. When we got here at about 8 o'clock Pacific time, the roads were dry. And over the course of maybe even 30 minutes, the road that we were standing on was submerged with water. So that water from Washington State, from the Nooksack River, it has, of course, crossed into Abbotsford. It's filling up the farm field to the right of me. It's flooded this recycling plant to my left. Now, the hope is now for residents in Huntington, which is just to the north of me here, is that that water doesn't go any further. It doesn't cross those train tracks and cause flooding to their properties. But really, it's a wait and see type of thing at this point.
Okay. Wait and see, but give us a sense. Are there more evacuations coming? Are there any sense of the damage to people's properties yet? Because, my God, when those pictures, Heather, are just unbelievable.
They are unbelievable, and it's unbelievable to be here, too. I really don't even think those pictures do it justice, because when you're here, you can just see the scope of the damage that's been done, and the damage isn't done yet, necessarily. I mean, there's still fields upon fields that are flooded. Now, we asked officials earlier today if they anticipated there'd be more evacuation orders in this area, and they said at this point, no, but it is a fluid situation. They're still not saying when residents here in Huntington Village might be able to come back to their homes. There is, of course, still that evacuation order in parts of Sumas Prairie. That's where the majority of those farms that we've seen that have flooded from the previous event are. And so it's really a wait and see type of thing right now. But we also know there are other places in other parts of British Columbia that are also under evacuation orders. There's a state of emergency in Hope. And this is all happening under this another system that's moving in tomorrow. So it's just relentless. That's really the word we're hearing from residents here, is relentless. This first event happened 2 weeks ago, and here we are still talking about it and still talking about more rain on the way. And I think that's really the hard part for so many people, is they're trying to clean up, they're trying to get back to their lives while dealing with punishing weather.
Yeah, relentless punishing weather. CTV's Heather Wright there. The pictures don't do it justice, and the pictures are devastating enough. Thanks, Heather, for that reporting. Coming up next on our program, Pandemic Politics 5.0, is the fifth wave really coming? Should governments prepare for Omicron lockdowns, or will the vaccine wall hold? Press gallery standing by. Our special guest, Dr. Samantha Knott. Stay with us. So the Omicron variant of COVID-19 is here. The variant has officially touched down in Canada, 2 confirmed cases in Ontario, 1 in Quebec. Ontario's top doctor says he expects more will be found. Also, 2 presumptive cases in Hamilton. Canada jumped to action just last week, banning foreign nationals who travel from the Southern African region within the past 14 days. But travel measures, are they actually worthwhile? Will they stop the variant or not? Epidemiologists are slamming border measures as performative, to use Dr. Theresa Tam's word, saying vaccine equity will contain it. In other words, making sure the continent of Africa that has less than 10% vaccine rates gets the vaccine. What should Canada do? The press gallery is going to weigh in on the politics and the medical side on this. We've got the political side with Stephanie Levitz, reporter with the Toronto Star's Parliamentary Bureau. Also, Ian Bailey, reporter with the Globe's Ottawa Bureau and writes the Daily Politics Briefing. And Dr. Samantha Knott is the founder and executive director of War Child Canada and also a global health specialist. Good to see all of you. Dr. Knott, I'll start with you. What concerns do you have about the variant, and what concerns do you have about how the world is responding?
Well, to be honest, Evan, the variant is not surprising in the sense that this is something we've all been worried about for quite some time. For as long as we have such a large percentage of low-income countries who are achieving less than 10% vaccination coverage rate, this was unfortunately, predictable. And we've seen this in other parts of the world as well. So on the whole, I mean, I certainly agree with the statements that President Biden put out today. We need to be concerned. We need to monitor it very closely. But we also shouldn't jump to conclusions and panic quite yet. At least that's my perspective on this.
Okay, but just on that, is panicking a travel ban, Dr. Nutt, in your view, is the closing the borders a smart thing to do or not?
I think, to be honest with you, Evan, closing the borders at this stage, what we have seen historically every time we have a new variant that emerges is that by the time we identify the variant, it is already on our shores. We saw this with the B117 British variant. We've seen this with the Delta variant. Both times we imposed travel bans. Both times it was already too late by the time it was identified. I wouldn't be surprised, and including with the information that we've gathered just in the last couple of days, we already know it is here in Canada. Really now the next question, the big question is, you know, to what extent is it going to overtake Delta as the major variant that has a foothold here in Canada? And we simply don't know that yet. So I certainly agree with other epidemiologists. I'm a public health doctor myself, that travel bans of this sort are often too little, too late, and are unlikely to really address the problem in a way that's more significant than what we're already doing. We're testing people before they get on planes. We're testing them when they arrive back in the country. We are requiring that they be doubly vaccinated. Yeah. So these are all really important steps, and we need to pursue those and test.
Steph, how does this transform in any way the debate about vaccines? PCR tests at borders, pandemic supports, as there's concern. And of course, the travel bans from certain countries. Refract that through the political landscape.
One has to wonder if we're not walking into another situation of a bit of a communications failure between public health and their political masters. Because I think that if you really listen to what Dr. Theresa Tam and others and other public health officials have been saying for the last several months, that vaccines were not the be-all and end-all. Vaccines were not going to end the pandemic. Vaccines were going to make the pandemic less deadly. But on the other hand, you have the politicians basically clamoring for vaccines and positioning vaccines as the de facto way to end the pandemic. Along comes a new variant. One hopes that the vaccines we've all received and people will continue to receive will provide enough protection against the variant not to make it deadly. But either we trust the vaccines or we don't trust the vaccines. I'm not sure how we can keep having it both ways, because how does that encourage people to get vaccinated if those who aren't just say, oh, there's another variant, we're going to go back into lockdown. What's the point of all of this anyway?
Well, we don't know if this particular variant, the impact of the vaccines, but it seems to be everybody, including Joe Biden today, saying, get your shot, get your booster shot. Does this change the political debate about this?
No, but perhaps it's less a matter, by the way, of ending the pandemic. It is more a matter of managing the pandemic with the use of vaccines, with the use of hand washing, keeping a distance, tests, and that sort of thing. I suspect, you know, people want this to be over. I think many people will probably seize on Joe Biden's comments about sort of kind of a moderate approach to this, because they want this over, they want this done. But I think we're going to be managing this through this variant and probably the next variant to come.
Just Steph, let me quickly swing back to you before I go back to Dr. Nutt. Obviously, we watch debates in the House about, you know, hybrid parliaments, vaccinating MPs, getting rid of PCR tests at the border. A lot of these conservatives pushing the liberals to do something and the liberals pushing back. Does the emergence of Omicron change that?
It's interesting. I mean, I think one question I would suspect to see surface politically is PCR testing at the border, because the question now becomes, if you are a twice vaccinated Canadian or a fully vaccinated Canadian, you're traveling home from abroad, you no longer need this test, you don't have to go into isolation if you don't have any symptoms. What if the science begins to tell us something new about this variant and about how it's transmissible, and the science around it changes? And I think we just have to wonder, can politicians find a place of common agreement on the science? Is that possible anymore, or is it just all devolving into political he said, he said, and making it really hard to make these decisions in a sensible way that's not clouded by political judgment?
And Dr. Nutt, does this mean Canada, for example, and provinces have to get on with a booster shot much quicker? Does this mean people over the holidays are going to say, geez, traveling right now is a bad idea, or maybe it won't even happen?
Well, look, I mean, the booster we know is incredibly important. We've seen in other jurisdictions throughout the world, especially in Israel, that once you hit that six-month threshold, immunity starts to go down, and especially for our most vulnerable, for our seniors, and making sure that we're getting at least everyone over 70 who is hitting that six-month mark boosted. Ideally, we will expand that to include those who are over the age of 50, because we do need to, as we move into the holiday season, more people indoors, more potential for spread. We need to take that very seriously. And of course, the boosters are a major part of our arsenal right now. But I think I want to take it back, Evan, as well, to the whole point around vaccine equity, what this variant should be. I mean, it really is a very strong reminder that we have a long way to go to ensure that we have equitable access to vaccines, particularly in low-income countries, particularly in the Southern Hemisphere. And even if you look at COVAX, for example, out of all of those doses that have been pledged, less than about 14% has actually been delivered. So as long as we have such large pockets where you have a tremendous number of people who are unvaccinated, we will see variants. We will continue to chase our tails. And that's where we need to take this conversation. We need to revisit things like trips as well to see how we can get more shots in arms, because that's what this is all about. I've been on the front lines of this now for several months. Shots in arms is what we really need, along with testing.
Okay, Ian, just one second, Ian and Steph, I'm going to come back to you. I want to go to Alberta. Alberta's not reporting any cases of Omicron, but they are now testing travelers. Let's listen in, and we'll jump back to the press gallery panel in a minute. Here's Alberta.
156 travelers have been identified who had returned in the past 2 weeks from one of the countries identified in Canada's enhanced border measures. These travelers were contacted over the weekend with information on current protocols, including testing and quarantine requirements. These travelers and their households have also been offered household rapid testing kits in addition to PCR tests. To be clear, no one has tested positive here, but we're working with these individuals to reduce any chance of spread. As a precaution, the following measures will be implemented for all COVID-19 cases identified in returning international travelers here in Alberta: full case investigations and contact notification, PCR testing for all close contacts, and rapid testing for households in specific settings like schools and childcare settings. For all confirmed.
Yeah. Okay, so that is Jason Kenney. Who's just, as I take notes on that, no cases, but about more than 100 folks have returned to Alberta on that. I'm back with Dr. Nutt and Steph Levitz and Ian Bailey. Ian, you wanted to jump in, as we just wanted to check in on the situation in Alberta. Jump in on the politics of this.
No, I was just going to say, it seemed today in the House, at least two Liberal ministers speaking to the issue of vaccine equity, that they were very satisfied with the status quo. So unless there's, although I see that the our ambassador to the United Nations, Mr. Ray, was not. So from the government side, it seems as though they're willing to hold firm with their new approach, with their current approach in dealing with the issue of vaccine equity. No change there. We'll have to see if that shifts a little bit.
Yeah, I was interesting on that vaccine equity issue, Steph Levitz. Again, and Dr. Nutt mentioned this. The TRIPS, which is essentially a WTO agreement on whether or not intellectual property for genetic pharmaceuticals should be protected, and of course in the 80s they dropped that. South Africa and India and other countries want these dropped so they can manufacture their own generic versions of these vaccines. Is Canada on the front lines of this vaccine equity issue, or is it more talk and less action?
I'm not sure, and you know, I welcome being corrected, but I'm not sure that Canada has ever properly articulated its opposition to dropping the TRIPS waiver. It's always been very vague about it. And you know, I was looking, Evan, earlier, one of the countries that's getting Canadian donations from COVAX is Nigeria, which is one of the source countries for the cases we have here now. Nigeria just had to go borrow $400 million so it could buy more vaccines. That doesn't seem right, when wealthy countries have access and the power to make these vaccines more affordable and more accessible to more countries.
I should say, and Dr. Nutt, you could correct me, or Ian, I've spoken to the minister, especially when Karina Gould was the Minister of International Development, now it's Harjit Sajjan, but they said, you know, we're not opposed to it, we're just trying to work it out and let them produce domestically, which the bottom line is they did not vote, and they were part of delaying the vote from a year ago that South Africa and India wanted to get these drugs generically produced. So maybe you could inform us as to what more Canada could do, Dr. Nutt.
Yeah, and Steph is absolutely correct, Evan. The reality is that no answer is, in fact, an answer from Canada and from our politicians. The truth is we haven't supported the TRIPS waiver, even though Joe Biden, for example, the president has turned around and said that he would like to see the TRIPS waiver in place as well. You know, the United States hasn't shown any real leadership on this either. I mean, we need to, especially in the context of the Omicron variant, we need to revisit this. We need to ramp up production, especially in the Southern Hemisphere. If this is what countries that are struggling to vaccinate their populations are asking for, on not just from a point of view of equity, but also from a strictly public health perspective, it is incumbent on, we will all benefit from vaccinating as many people as possible. Even if you look at Canada's commitment, we've committed, you know, several hundred million doses, about 500 million doses. We've delivered, I think at last count, from what I can tell, is about certainly less than 10 million of those. Most of them, again, AstraZeneca, which hasn't been found to be as effective, particularly against the Delta variant. So, you know, we need to really revisit these issues and we need to come together, because otherwise we will just continue to chase our tails, new variants will crop up, and we're just going to be putting out fires all over the place. It's untenable the way it is.
All right. And by the way, so that may change the booster shot. Just before I let you go, let me go to Ian Bailey. The Liberals finally introduced this ban on conversion therapy. It had died in the last parliament. They're trying to get it through this time. What do you make of the fact that they have to get it through before the holiday break, number one. Two, I think about 62 or 63 MPs, most of them conservative, one MP, opposed it last time. What are the politics and how do they cross-cut on the conversion therapy legislation, Ian?
Well, two things. I think the Liberals, I mean, it's going to be a tight race to get this through committee and get this legislation properly processed. Second point, Aaron O'Toole has just come through a campaign where he said he was leading a party that wasn't your grandfather's Conservatives. But this bill, this issue seems clearly to be divisive in his ranks. And so a vote against it, a kind of the result we saw last time, isn't going to sort of reflect well on the Conservative Party, at least the kind of Conservative Party Aaron O'Toole is touting. So I think it's going to be yet another problematic issue for Mr. O'Toole, divisive. That said, we haven't had a reaction yet from the Conservatives yet in terms of what they think of this new bill. So let's wait to see that. But I think it could be very challenging for Mr. O'Toole, yet another challenge for Mr. O'Toole.
Yeah, Steph, weigh in on that, because if he has 60-odd MPs that vote against this, he will vote to ban it. And he and other prominent MPs, I think like Michelle Rempel-Garner, will. But a lot of them won't. So what does that tell you, Steph?
Well, one thing we have to note, though, is that the Conservative caucus that sits right now in the House of Commons is not the same caucus that was sitting when this bill first went through last year. There's been some turnover. And I think the turnover bears a little bit of scrutiny in terms of looking at who some of the more high-profile voices were against this bill the last time and who sits in their seats in the House of Commons now. I'm not saying by any means that this bill is going to sail through the Conservative caucus. But there's a couple of other things to note. In the platform, the Conservatives did promise a ban on conversion therapy. And they, you know, they took issue with some of the wording of the original one. We'll see about that. But you know what else, Evan? I mean, I was reading today the voices and words of some trans activists and others who were pointing out that a ban is one thing, but the government also has to be willing to put forward the resources to enforce the ban and to also educate and encourage people on the harms that is conversion therapy. And so you can't just legislate something without providing adequate support on the other side. And I found that a compelling argument because it again raises the question of how much this ban is necessary and motivated by politics or a sincere desire to make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah,
if Stephanie is right. I was just going to say, if Stephanie's right and the party has shifted in a way that sees this bill pass, that'd be a win for Mr. O'Toole.
Sorry, Ian, I got 10 seconds. We lost your audio there. Go ahead.
If Stephanie's right and the bill goes through with significant conservative support, it would be a win for the kind of party Mr. O'Toole says he's leading.
All right, I got to leave it there. But your sir echoes this, the ban issue on the travel with the variant. Do bans actually work? And we'll find out. Unless they're enforced. All right, Dr. Nutt, great to have you on the program. Steph and Ian, always a pleasure to have you two as well. Thank you so much for watching. That's your Power Play Day in Politics. We'll be back in 23 short hours. Remember, hug your loved ones. Happy Hanukkah. And to Jen Keeler, who's been producing for the last 9 days, thanks, Jen. You've been an absolute star. See you tomorrow.